What is basketball IQ? How can you tell if a player has it? And which players in the NBA have very high IQs? The only question left is, say with me, sports fans, you win? Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the B-Ball Breakdown Podcast. Today, I'm really excited to bring on my mentor, Al Bennett, Coach Bennett, who I coached with at the high school level, and he has coached at various levels in college and high school for a lot of years, knows more about the game than I do, certainly. So I'm really excited to bring him on and talk a little bit about basketball IQ. So Coach, Al, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Nick. It'll be fun.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I want to thank you because you were the guy who gave me the impetus to do the Steph Curry defense breakdown. And in fact, sports fans, he came over and we went through the footage to identify good examples of his defense. It certainly caused quite a stir, but thank you for having that conversation.
My pleasure. It needed to be done.
Oh, I agree. I agree. And, you know, would you believe that there's a lot of Steph Curry hate out there? But really, I was kind of shocked.
Right. Because they want it to be the old way. You know, they want the big, strong guard, the super athletic, strong, you know, just has it all. And he's not like that. But he is like that. People don't realize it. And, right. You know, you mentioned to me the other day, in fact, I heard it on TV, he has the most steals of any player in the NBA. And it's like, that's got to say something about his defense if he has the most steals.
Mm-hmm. People want to say, oh, well, steals are not a good example of defense and the gambling or whatever. But it's like with the kind of steals that I see him get, his hands are so quick that it's just really it's impressive. And, you know, OK, is he elite? Is he like a Kawhi Leonard or actually, you're not even sure if Kawhi Leonard is an elite defender, right?
I am. I'm not sure. I'm really not. And I watch him and it's like. You know, I have my doubts, but I don't have my doubts about Curry. And it's like everybody said how good Jerry West was as a defender. He used to steal the ball every game. Mm-hmm. And the reason why, he was always in position to steal the ball. You know, he'd always get his hands in the passing lane. So I don't see how people can deny it. He's a great defender.
I agree. I think, I think also that the issue is, like you said, what people want to see and what they think he needs to look like. And right. I feel like that's part of the blowback now is he doesn't look like that kind of player. But what we value on defense, I think, is also a little bit more subtle than what others do. And yes. I got criticized for saying, well, you're just cherry-picking plays. You can find great plays from anybody to show how good the defense they are. And I think that's the opposite. I think you could find bad plays by everybody to show how bad a defender is. Right. But, like, you know, and so my question to everyone on Twitter when they were yelling at me was like, okay, you know, how many clips would you like me to furnish you before you believe that it's not just cherry picking? Right. You know, and no one, I'm like, is it 100? Would you like to see 200 plays? Would you like the average, you know, if I showed you 3 plays a game, would that convince you? And nobody seems to want to answer that question.
Yeah, and when you say it's subtle, it's like if you haven't studied it and you don't look at it, you know, and you really get into what he's doing, it's like when you say the Warriors are a good defensive team, it's subtle. You can't just go by their wins and how many points people score. You have to see what they're doing. It's like I mentioned to you the other day, they made a triple switch on one play. Like, it's astonishing to what they're, some of the things they do and some of the players that do it. It's amazing. And people don't see that. They say, oh, is he a lockdown defender? You know, and when he's on him, does he score less? Well, you switch so much. There's so much to a lockdown defender. It's a crazy thing to say.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, you know, we saw it last night where he got switched on to LaMarcus Aldridge. And then instantly, Bogut flew over there almost like a double team, but then Steph saw that and then switched off of him. Right. And they all moved in the direction together. And, you know, the one thing, I've seen a few of the Warriors' practices. And, you know, they do, you know, they spend time on offense for sure, but there's no question that the overriding thing that they do most is defense and closing out and rotations. And even though those drills don't necessarily mimic what I saw, like, for instance, there, I think it's the constant repetition and the focus on that, even a little bit every practice from the Ron Adams, the coach, I think, you know, that probably speaks volumes to why they're so good on defense and probably why other teams aren't, because I suspect they're not doing it as much as the Warriors are.
Yeah, and you know, this kind of segues into IQ, basketball IQ, which is a perfect way to start, because what do they do as a team and what does he do individually that shows that kind of basketball IQ? And it's like he's always aware of where the ball is and he is and in his relationship to his team. It's like he, like you said, he can switch on someone, they come over and help, immediately he switches back. You know, and he still sees the ball. He still sees the man. And that's, God, that's basketball IQ. A lot of guys can't do that.
Now, you might remember when I was coaching with you, and just, you know, for full disclosure, I was Al's assistant at the high school level for a number of years and learned a lot from him. And so we would have these kids come in, and I swear to God, like the first day we were playing, and I would recognize that, I would see a young, you know, sophomore in high school, and he would be able to do that and understand where he should be on the weak side, for instance, and understand where his man is in the ball. And I would say, I would always pull him aside at some point and say, are you good at math? And I swear to God, 90% of them would always answer, yeah, I'm good at math. I like math. And I really feel like there's a connection there. I got to find out if Steph Curry was good at math, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was. Because there's something about angles and spacing and awareness like that that seems to translate.
Right. And when you say angles and awareness, that's IQ. That's basketball IQ. Can you see it? And can you be in a position where you can actually see everything? You know, and are you doing that all the time? And sometimes I see Curry, like I see a lot of players, they actually turn the wrong way, but he readjusts himself, you know, and I wonder, like, did someone teach him that? Or is part of that just his basketball IQ? You know, and I think it relates to exactly what we're talking about. When you say, what makes him so good? What makes him so much better? What makes Magic Johnson or... you know, all the great players, what makes them that much better? And I think you have to analyze that. I think you can. And I think if you've been around the game long enough, you know, I think people see it. And, you know, I think the average person sees it. It's like when you see a team like we watched them against Memphis, you can just watch a game and go, like, God, their energy is terrible. They're just running up and down the floor without any energy. They're not looking. They're not in the right position. I think the average person can see it. But to define it, specifically, you know, I think you have to study the game. I think you have to be around it for a long time and be a coach, not just a player.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, you know, we talk about like rotating on defense and being help and help. There is a certain mindset, I suppose, you have to approach the game to be able to do that well. I remember when I was in seventh grade, it was easy for me. I think because I wanted to help. And I wonder, I suppose when you drill it, and we would do it that way, you would teach the kids you have to help. And there is no choice, this is what you do. But is right. there some sort of inherent notion of like that some guys are just simply better at it, maybe because of where they come from, you know, emotionally?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think one of the things is how you view yourself in terms of the team. It's like your ego. It's like, how do you fit into this role? And are you willing to play that role? And that's not having that kind of ego for that really is part of that IQ. Can you be taught this? Can you see the reason and the purpose for it? And can you go beyond that? It's like I remember teaching kids certain things and they would pick it up and then they would go beyond that. They would do something that they've actually intellectualized what they're doing. It's like what Curry does is he'll go, and I've seen him do this, his man will shoot the ball pretty far out, and he'll immediately go to the inside of the lane for a long rebound and even go beyond that to the other side, and the ball bounced right to him. Now, is that basketball IQ or is he just lucky? He does it so often when he's in that position. I don't think so. I think it's IQ. So what he's been taught, and he does this so well, he gets that hand up in the air on a shot, he gets the other one back, and like we've talked about, he gets his left leg up, forcing him to his right side, and as soon as the ball's gone up, boom, he moves. It's like he's gone beyond defending a player into moving into another position. Now, did someone teach him that? Probably so. But has he learned it like it's just second nature? And why? Why has he learned it? More so than other guys.
Right. Because you wouldn't think that his father would be the guy teaching him that, only because his father was a shooter. You know, I don't think was a particularly outstanding defensive player. Certainly, it didn't stand out in my mind, from my memory. So it's like, but then again, was he hanging around, you know, NBA practices? And then again, you know, back then, were NBA practices doing a lot of that kind of thing? I would be willing to argue that he probably learned it in a place like Davidson, where they had a really good coach, and he spent, I think, at least 3 years there. Where, you know, you have to figure at a mid-D1, you know, mid-major, all those details have to be covered or else they're going to get destroyed. And so I want to find out. I kind of want to take a trip to Davidson and interview the coach, because I would be surprised if he said, oh, yeah, we didn't really work on after the shot, you know, get back to the free throw line, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder, because I look at some of the college teams. You want me to mention, like Syracuse would be a perfect example.
Okay.
So all they do is play zone. And it's like, I know there are man-to-man principles in the zone, but it seems like every player from Syracuse that goes into the NBA looks like they're lost. Mm-hmm. It's like they have a tough time in that team concept, you know, and it's like they don't have those kind of fundamentals. But then you look at a guy like Curry, yeah, you have to wonder, like, where did he learn this? Did he learn it by osmosis, being around the pro game when he was a little kid? Probably. But did he learn it specifically? But whatever he learned, he's gone beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, and he does it all the time.
What you mentioned about ego is interesting, because on offense, certainly egos are even more prevalent because of the shots. The guys will take shots. And certain guys are supposed to take more shots than others. But what I find interesting about defense is that there really shouldn't be any egos. Five guys together, right? It should be equal. You're all on the same team. You're all doing the same thing together. Yet, what's an example of a guy who's got like a much bigger ego on defense is that guy who probably won't rotate over, or who puts his hand up and just kind of turns, just kind of watches the ball and stands there, right?
And he doesn't see the big picture, you know, and that's part of... That's part of ego, but it's also part of your ability to learn and go beyond. It's like the guy who doesn't play that kind of defense, like out of five guys, there's maybe a couple guys that don't see the importance of it. That is part of a basketball IQ. Do you see the importance of it? Mm-hmm. And I think even on offense, when you have a shooter, and I hate to say this, but I think a guy like Kobe Bryant, he sees the importance of his ability to score. And it's like he knows that's important for the team, not just to score a lot of points. And I see Curry the same way. And I even see his coach. It's like I see him put up some bad shots. And I think to myself, if I was in that position, I would go ahead, take a couple bad shots, because that's important for you to shoot those shots for this team. And I think he knows that too. And that is, again, that's part of your contribution to the team. Maybe some guys can shoot more. Maybe some guys have to do other things. Now, I think a lot of pros do that. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes beyond that. There's something that separates a Curry from some really, really great players. You know, it's like with Michael Jordan. There's something that separates those guys. Mm-hmm. And I think the average person knows that. They can look at him and say, yeah, this guy's the best. This guy's the best. But as a coach, what makes them better than the really great players? Because they certainly are better than the really great players.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we have a dichotomy here as we move into the new millennium and into the, you know, later in this century, because, you know, back in the day, Jordan was probably not the best of teammates. You know, he was really hard on his teammates. And I think he got better, you know, in the second three-peat. But he was brutal in the name of toughening up his teammates and whatever. Yeah. Plus, he was just so dominant physically that he was just, you know, he took those shots. He made 50% of them, like he earned it. But my take on it now is, when we see point guards, lead guards shoot like Curry or shoot like Damian Lillard, I think we talked about this before, but my take on it is, A, you got to hit enough of those to really earn it. And then B, you have to be a really good teammate. Because all I can figure is that you would engender such ill will if you were a jerk like a Kobe. And by the way, and Kobe will probably acknowledge that he was a jerk teammate, and, you know, in the name of toughening up his teammates. But I just think in this day and age, it won't fly. You won't be able to be that Steph Curry kind of player without being a really, really good teammate.
Can I read you a list of some of my IQ characteristics?
Yes, please. Lay them out.
Okay. The first one I put down, and this is kind of out there, but I think it has a lot to do with their nervous system. You know, some guys can't play under pressure. Some guys aren't flexible. Some guys aren't good listeners, you know? And it's like, you know how like big games, the good players kind of step up. It's like you always hear, how'd they do in the playoffs? Oh, they went from averaging 24 points to 28 points, something mm-hmm. like that. Or they got, instead of getting 9 rebounds, they got 12. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think there's something about someone's nervous system. It's like you look at the really great players, like Michael Jordan. They don't get distracted. Even though they play to the crowd, they can go, you know, go like this, they can go like this. They can play to the crowd, but they don't get distracted. And it looks like Curry has that. He looks like he's like always concentrating, and nothing gets into that. Mm-hmm. And I told you, one of the things I don't like about him is when he runs from defense to offense and he doesn't look back, but it's almost like he knows where he's going and what's happening. It bugs the heck out of me as a coach. But I see that look all the time, and I think most people do. He's really focused, and yeah. It doesn't seem like you can get into that. You can disrupt him. You can't do it with a hard foul. You can't do it with a blocked shot. He doesn't do it when he misses a shot. You know, I think it has something to do with his nervous system. I really do.
Yeah, well, we talked about that. I talked about that on the show before, where what I describe it is remember the Matrix? When Neo finally discovers that he's the one, and then the agent starts to fight him, and he literally he turns to the side, he's blocking everything, but it's the calm on his face, right? And that's what we see. Now, sometimes he'll get to a game or a startup, and you can see that it's not quite there. And he has a kind of a crappy game. It's very rare. It might have happened 5 times this year. And you know, and by the way, you will see the refs bother him. So you'll see he's not a robot. But yes, there's no question that he is, you know. And then you see Draymond Green, by the way, which is a great comparison, who is puffing out his chest and getting technicals and just screaming and one all the time. I think I kind of like that as well, right? I think maybe you need a balance on both ends of those scales.
Yeah, I think Curry is I've seen him get upset with calls, but he lets it go.
Yeah.
And you look at Green. I think he lets it go because it doesn't affect his play. He still plays with that same intensity. So even though they're different, they let it go, part of the nervous system, and they still keep playing at the same high level with high intensity. So, you know, you think they're different, but is their play different? No, it's the same. The same high intensity awareness. And I saw Green help Curry on a play the other night where he helped and recovered and got back on his man. Curry got back on the ball. And I thought, my goodness. And he was just screaming and yelling at the officials like it, you know, like it just never happened. So I think when it comes right down to it, the great players have that more than the average player. The average player doesn't see everything. They miss it. And it's like you and I have talked about Young. It's like he's a great one-on-one player, but his focus is so small. I mean, he is a great one-on-one player, but that's it. He misses the nuances of the game. Yeah. And it's like these other guys, they're great players, but they don't miss the nuances.
Right.
They're able to focus even if they're pissed off.
Right. We're talking about Nick Young of the Lakers right now, who we actually coached against in high school. And he plays the same way. It was so funny. He played the same way in high school as he does in the pros.
Absolutely.
And he was good at that. I mean, I'm not even sure he's great at the one-on-one stuff these days either, but there's no question he can score when you give him the ball.
Right.
It's very, I guess, myopic is the word. He just doesn't want to see or he can't see, because that's the next question is, can you teach this awareness?
I think you can to a certain extent, but I also think it might be God-given, that it's just there, mm-hmm. you know, and you have to have the physical ability. If you don't, you're still going to go and rise to the occasion. But, you know, it could be a part of what he has inside of him, Curry. It could be because he's played and been around basketball so much at such a high level that he's had great it could be a combination of all of that.
Yeah.
But it seems to me there's something there that you can't measure. You have to just look at it and go, you have to find a definition for it. And I think to start off with saying something about his nervous system kind of sets him apart.
Well, I also wonder, remember, and we talked about this before, because we were always hyper aware of like the mental side and where our players were coming from and how we can better communicate. It certainly could be background, right? There could be some sort of stability at the home gives them the stability on the court. I mean, I don't want to say
that it also can be in coaching.
Yeah.
There might be a way that you can, and I think that's true. It's like the way you communicate, the way you deal with the players can heighten that. You know, it's like we've all seen good coaches make teams better, even with not so good a talent. So there must be something that is teachable, that makes that awareness a little greater than what they had before. Now, some, I think, have a little bit of it before they even start. So it just gets, you know, if you're really a great player like Curry or Jordan or Magic Johnson, it gets even greater.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rise to the occasion where we're all going like, oh, man, these guys are great. So anyway, the second one, I mentioned this, is about their ego. You know, they have the ego to score and to win and to compete, but they have the ego to listen and learn and conceptualize and go beyond what you're teaching. Mm-hmm. They bring it in. And I think that's part of it, too. You can't do that if you're always fighting and you're always trying to prove yourself. You know, and to be a good teammate, like you said about Curry. I think you have to have, your ego has to be at the right level. It can't be always to score, always to win. You know, you have to be able to let it filter in and sit with it. Even like when you have a bad game or you do something you know is crazy, it doesn't kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like you're pretty even keel. That's what Wooden used to say. No highs and no lows. It's kind of even keel. So it's like even when you win the championship, you're able to focus and maybe say, hey, I got to work on this. Even when you've done something crazy, it's like, you know, I did something crazy, I'm going to do it again, but I'm not going to sit there. So it's part of your ego. It really is. And the third thing, and I mentioned this, is intellectualize. It's like when you teach, we used to do this all the time. You teach a kid something, and I've learned from kids. You know, I've seen kids do things off of things I taught them, and I thought, I never taught them that. They went from there to there and stole the ball over here. And I thought, man, I should teach that.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they intellectualized what they had learned and went beyond it. It reminds me like a Pete Maravich. Mm-hmm. It's like I always wondered, like, how did he develop all those drills? People weren't doing them when he started them. And he was able to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. He was able to make all these drills. Someone probably showed him a crossover or like the in and out, but he went beyond that. He went in his legs. He had drills where he bounced the ball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like he was able to intellectualize. I think there's something about that which is related to your ego, because if you're stuck on the same spot, it's like I can remember being a player when I was a young kid. I never thought about what these guys are doing today. It took some guy to do it, and then another guy to watch him and put it in his repertoire. And you know, we've talked about this. There are guys watching Curry shoot the ball today, little kids. There are going to be 20 of them in the pros pretty soon. Everybody's going to shoot like that.
Well,
it's a simple way to shoot.
Well, and would you believe that I'm still getting arguments and people are really resistant to this notion of reverse engineering? And it not only goes to like looking at what Curry is doing and then, you know, trying to intellectualize that and then perform it yourself. But it's also about, I forgot what I was going to say. It was
reverse engineering.
Reverse engineering. Like what you said about the defense. You know, you saw somebody do something that you didn't teach, but it was like out of what you were working on, and you, okay, let's teach everybody how to do that.
Right, exactly.
And that method apparently is like scary to coaches and to some degree, and it's really troubling because, like I said before, if we didn't reverse engineer Kenny Saylor's jump shot in 1955, then we'd still be standing on the floor shooting two-handed set shots. So, you know, I think it's so important, and, you know, and we said this before, it's like, when's the last time Coach X in the NBA has gone to a coaching clinic, right?
Exactly.
To really look at what's going on at whatever level it might be, because there might be something new.
That's part of the ego, you mm-hmm. know? Because if you're stuck in what you're doing, you can't get out of it. It's like, I remember Wooden saying this at one of his camps that I worked with. He said, the best coaching is probably some junior high coach in this little town somewhere in America that is making those kids so much better and teaching them the fundamentals, and they're playing together. I just looked at him and I thought, wow, that is so outside the box. It's so ego, without ego. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm one of the greatest coaches in any sport in the history of sports. And yet he's saying, yeah, I think the best coaching is probably some junior high coach. It's like, that's how you learn, because you're open. You look at your players, you see what they do, and you think, God, I'm going to put that in. That's a great thing. And I think that's how we've progressed. I think coaches have done that. And I think players have done that too. You know, they look at each other, you know, and they copy each other. I would copy these guys today, mm-hmm. but I would always be working on, you know, it would open my mind up. And I remember this kind of, when I was in college, I used to practice by myself in the gym all by myself. I'd look at the clock, which was underneath the backboard. So I could dribble looking at the clock and see if I could see the time. And then I would dribble behind my back towards the baseline and shoot a fadeaway jump shot. And it's like, that's what they do today, right? I never did it. I never used it in a game, but I practice it because no one else ever used it. But I'd get bored. So I would fool around. Mm-hmm. And it was a great move. I'd go from, I'd dribble towards the right, really pushing the ball, and then throw it behind my back and take one dribble towards the baseline and fade away. And I was just deadly with it. Never used it in the game. And then as basketball progressed, guys would do it. They'd mm-hmm. think out of the box. They'd think like, if I go hard to my right and I see the defender going that way, I'll just dribble through my legs. It's like someone did that and they went, whoa, this works. You know, it's like that Jim Barnett move.
Yeah.
That he taught us. It's like so perfect. Who taught him that? I think he learned it on his own.
Oh, no, I thought he had a guy who taught him that. Who?
Oh, you're right.
Right, and I think that coach was coaching like in Oakland or something, like in, you know, an urban setting with kids, right, who, exactly, you know who were athletic. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of like we talked about, you know, we didn't stress sliding on defense as much as we did turning and running.
Right, and someone saw someone turn and run.
Right.
That's how I learned it. Someone told me. They saw some of these really talented athletes get beat, and they just took off. They didn't slide. They turned around. And it's like they were so much faster than the guy dribbling the ball. They got back in position. So pretty soon, like when you're pressing and you have a long way to go, you just tell the guy, if you get beat, turn and run. Forget everything else. So I put it in the half court. If you get beat, forget it. Turn and run. That's the only way you're going to catch up. Don't be sliding.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, we were always told, you can't move your head side to side. It's like, how do you see? You got to get in an angle. And if you get in an angle, you can turn your head side to side because you can still see and you got the angle to recover.
Yeah.
So you learn.
Just to explain that real quick, it's like, you know, we would used to teach, look at the ground about 10 feet in front of you, and you let your peripheral vision allow you to see the ball and man. And, you know, right, we would train that, and nobody would ever do it in a game.
You couldn't do it unless you're like Magic Johnson and you can see like 30 feet to right and left.
Yeah, like a rabbit.
But if you're in the position where you're in that triangle and you can see man and ball, you can actually turn and not lose. If he goes, you're already off of him.
Mm-hmm.
So you can turn and turn back. You should teach that. But to stand rigid and look straight ahead, use your peripheral vision, it's impossible. Anyway, the fourth one is you're not distracted. You stay focused no matter what. And it's like I see that with guys who, like Curry, it doesn't matter. Miss or make, He's not distracted. And in, I've seen him in the last like month miss shots at the end of the game where he was close. He even did it last night. He missed a couple shots. He did it the game before. He missed a couple shots. Didn't even affect him. He showed he was upset, but bam, it's gone. The next day he's shooting the ball because he doesn't get distracted. And I think that's, I don't know. I think you, as a coach and as a player, you can improve that. You learn by experience. But I think also there's something there that he has. And the other one, and we've talked about this, number five, rises to the occasion. It's like big game, you know, everybody's up. But that doesn't mean you go overboard emotionally, mm-hmm. you know, but you rise to the occasion and you're still in control, but definitely rises to the occasion. And the other one is experiment. You think outside the box. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can think of my own career as a coach on certain parts of the game. I could always think out of the box. Defensively, I could see something and go, "Well, we're not doing that. What can I do to help us with that?" And I could invent a drill.
Right.
Not so much offensively. As a player, a little bit. But I think the really great players. I think that's how the game keeps moving on, is because there are players who can think outside of the box. They're creative. Mm-hmm. There are coaches who can think outside of the box. It's like the old style of basketball where it's very power basketball. It's very inside. It's very half court. It's like the game is changing, and it's the next generation of coaches are going to define it even more. They're going to think outside the box because they've seen it.
Yeah.
And so they'll develop it even greater as they go.
You know, what I love about the notion of being creative is that, you know, a lot of times you run these offensive sets to get back to the on the offensive side, and it's rote. And you have to do the same thing. Even like you used to talk about movers and blockers and you liked it. But to me, I was like, well, shit, if I was going to have to be a blocker all the time and just like screen and screen and screen, maybe I catch the ball. You know, I remember I had a really good guard one of those years when I was coaching, and we could run pick and roll every single time. He probably would score or whatever. But then I'm thinking I'll have two guys who just stand there every possession over and over again, waiting and maybe get the ball. Maybe they don't. That's not fun. That's not basketball. That's not keeping you engaged.
You're right.
And so that was when I played too, that was how I was always looking for, okay, I know I'm supposed to go there when the pass goes there, but what happened if I do go here once or twice? You know, and just to experiment, just to mix it up, because that's what I was always afraid of as a coach, was I didn't want it to get to the point where they just got stagnant and bored and, you know, lost the freedom, the creativity that you're talking about.
Right. And I always think about some of the offenses that I taught, because I was from the old school, the Rupps and the Knights and the Woodens. It's very rote, you know, the passing game, the Bobby Knight passing game. I used to watch them and think, wow, that's the greatest offense. But, God, they don't do much. They keep, you know, it's like they keep going back and forth and back and forth. It's like today's game is not like that. That screen and roll, you better have the other guys doing something too. And it's like, that's what I see the Warriors do when they're at their best. They screen and roll, and someone screens someplace else and cuts through, you know. And then they don't just cut through; they come around a screen, mm-hmm. and the movement is continuous, but with a real purpose. And I think I'm at the blame at that, but it's part of what I grew up in. It's too rote. Mm-hmm. It's like what you said. It's got to be fun. It's got to let them express, but it's got to be in a team-oriented type of thing. It's like, I think I've seen players who watch Kobe Bryant. I've seen this. They're standing cross-legged.
Right.
Just watching. And he's going one-on-one. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they must go in the locker room and think, this is no fun. Mm-hmm. You know. And that can't be better for a team.
Oh, no. Well, especially because then if you watch that player on defense the next possession. And that's why I thought like Phil Jackson was always so smart about the triangle, was that he understood that, you know, Horace Grant or whatever, they don't need to shoot it every time, but they need to like catch the ball a little bit and pass the ball and move. Right. Make them feel part of something. And then we're going to get an extra 20% on the defensive end because of that.
And I think it works the other way. When you're really playing good, solid defense, like Villanova, that aggressive in the passing lanes, it affects your offense too. You're in it together, you know, and you have that energy. So, okay, number seven, you'll remember this one because we talked about this. Sees the whole, not just the part. Sees the whole part. You know, can see the reason why all this works together. Doesn't just see like the individual move. Doesn't just see one guy doing one thing. Sees the whole part, not just one part. And I think guys like Curry, Green is a perfect example. Magic Johnson, you know, I think they're a little bit step ahead, and that's what makes them so great. So sees the whole part, not just one part. Okay, number eight, if I can find it on my list here, where did I put eight? Let's see, seven, eight. This goes back, I think, a little bit with their physicalness. They have to be strong physically. They have to be flexible, and they have to have good balance. Now that's, you know, I think that's kind of axioms I got from Wooden, but I think it's true. You have to be strong. And I think we talked about Curry. It's like he can deadlift second on his team. Mm-hmm. We see him body up on big guys. They don't knock him over. You know, he's much stronger than he looks. And flexible, it's ridiculous how he is. The way he can move his body, especially when he's going in for a layup, mm-hmm. it's like he dips under, he goes around, and he's got unbelievable balance. You know, never off balance. Always like straight up. It's like when he plays defense and he puts a hand up and the hand back. And he puts the left leg up when he wants him to go to his right. It's like he's such good balance. And when people try to get around him, the way he moves his feet, mm-hmm. he just like takes him right on in his chest. He's got such great balance when he moves. And I think part of that you can learn, especially today, with all the different techniques that are coming out today. They can improve that. You've talked about it 100 times. Mm-hmm. It's like the way you shoot your jump shot, that hop. Yeah. You know, that is so balanced. It's ridiculous. You just get into it. You can't go right or left. You got to go forward, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's also part learning that and understanding it is part of their IQ, that they have that awareness, you know, and they're working on it. You've talked about what's the other guard for not Sacramento, Portland.
Yeah, Lillard.
Yeah, he wants to learn. You know, it's something you can teach that guy, and he'll pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's like you see some guys in the league for 10 years, they play the same way. They don't improve. And it's like you hear coaches say, like, you know, they never work on it. They don't improve. It's like I think that's part of the IQ. You know, are you able to learn? Are you able to get stronger? Are you able to be more flexible, to work on the drills? All, again, part of the IQ. What's important? Mm-hmm. It certainly is. And let's see, what I do for number nine. Oh, you love this one. This is an old one. You have to be quick, but not out of control.
Yeah.
No, it's the Wooden one. But you have to realize that, how important that is. You know, coupled with balance, you have to be quick. You don't have to be the fastest guy in the world. The fastest guys in the NBA aren't always the best players. You know, I don't think Kobe Bryant at his height. I don't think Michael Jordan at their height. If you put them on the baseline, end line and ran down, they wouldn't win the race. There are guys way faster than them, but there's no one better than them. You know, they have that quickness and they're not out of control. They're not just not out of control physically, but emotionally.
Yeah. Oh, and listen, Russell Westbrook is my poster child for that. He doesn't understand change of pace, I think, is also what we're talking about.
One speed.
Yeah. And we talked about this before, and it's been always a frustrating thing for me because I watch him barrel to the hoop out of control, and he misses so many of these shots at the rim. And it reminds me of, like, when we would get, like, a ninth grader who would come in, and he was a great athlete, had no control over it.
Absolutely.
And he would just come flying in there. And, like, so for a pro of 6 years in the pros to play exactly like that, you know, and everyone yells at me because, you know, he gets triple-doubles in the third quarter,
right.
And he fills it up. And then, you know, the advanced analytics guys will argue that, you know, it's just the sheer volume of drives to the basket which overcomes any of the misses he makes. And I just feel like you're taking away this notion of improvement where he should be improving his footwork and his balance,
right,
like other really good guards that can't finish, and yet I'm the one who's nitpicking, I suppose.
No, I don't think you're nitpicking. I feel the same way. When I look at him, I think, what a great player. Fantastic. But his effectiveness is starting to improve for his team. But I would say his first 3 or 4 years for his team was limited. Now he's passing the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So offensively, his effectiveness is getting better because he's going through this period where he's learning. But remember the thing you showed about his defense, how he lost that one play with Curry, how he turned completely around?
Mm-hmm.
Is he working on that part of the game? Has he expanded that part of the game? Absolutely not. It's one way straight ahead. You know, and until he learns that for his entire game, he's not going to be the ball player that the really great players are. It's like people say, and this is what bugged me the most about Curry, this is only one-dimensional. Right, he's a great shooter. He's a ridiculous passer, but it's beyond that. It's the other part of the game. He's a great teammate and he's a great defender. And it's like he's a student of the game.
You know, I liken it really quickly to when Tony Parker came in the league. I think that he played a lot like Russell Westbrook. And, you know, one speed, he shot a whole lot. And we saw over the course of 2 or 3 years, Greg Popovich teach him. I mean, it was rough, and I think Tony Parker will tell you that he wrote him mercilessly for a long time to get him to learn. But he learned, and that's I think the difference that Russell Westbrook never got. He never got a coach that was had enough. It's not ego. It's I guess job security that he felt like he could really coach him and teach him without fear that he'd lose his job. I suppose, right?
Yeah, probably. And I also think it's from him, too. It's like he's so successful. People tell him how successful he is. And so he says, this is what I'm doing. And I'm going to keep doing this because people say I'm successful.
Yeah. And meanwhile,
like doesn't want to survey the whole picture.
And it'll work. It'll work until they play the top two or three teams in the league. And I've said that all along. And the problem we've had with proving that is that someone's been injured, you know, every year that they've been in the playoffs recently. So we haven't been able to see the full team play. But I don't know. I thought they've been healthy all year long, and they've been very bad against the top teams in the league who know how to defend. So he's very successful against the bottom 20, 25 defenses.
Absolutely.
And once it gets into it and you need this IQ that we're talking about.
Right.
It seems to me that it will hold them back. I very well could be wrong. Maybe. Do you think the Thunder can win the title?
No. And just because of that. And he may get 30 points and 12 rebounds and 10 assists. He may get a triple-double. But I always get that taste in my mouth, that feeling like, oh, my God, he got a triple-double, but darn. He didn't elevate the team as much as like a guy, like the guys we've mentioned, like a Johnson, like a Jordan, like a Curry. I heard a thing the other day, and I'm not exactly sure about the statistics, but they said of the games that Curry didn't play, there were like there were 49 games he didn't play. I think they were referring to back when he was hurt or they lost. They lost 14 of them when he didn't play. I mean, some ridiculous thing. It's like when he wasn't playing, they didn't win. Mm-hmm. And it's like people are saying, you know, they got other players. They do. But if he doesn't play for them, there is no way. And so his style of play elevates his team. I'm not sure Westbrook. I'm not sure Westbrook's style of play elevates them to championship,
right,
to being a champion. He may get his points and he may get a triple-double, but no, I don't think it elevates like the other players. And the other players, look at them. Look what they did. It's like, what's the forward that played with Magic Johnson that's in the Hall of Fame?
Worthy.
Yeah, he's a great player. But, you know, I've heard people say it. It's a question. Would Worthy be in the Hall of Fame if it wasn't for Magic Johnson? I'd say 50-50, probably, but it certainly puts him in there because he elevates everybody's play.
Right. And I think we've lost that notion recently. I feel like when Michael Jordan was coming up, and he was a lot like Westbrook in the very beginning of his career. And the criticism was always, oh, he doesn't make his teammates better. Let's make him better. And, you know, he took it to heart and he improved and he figured it out along with the coaching and everyone together. But I feel like I don't hear that being a goal anymore. Do you?
No. I think that's really important. You hear it sometimes. But I think sometimes you hear it and it's not true, because I've heard it about Westbrook. It's like I hear them saying, oh, he's getting more assists now. He's passing the ball more. But I don't see them elevating, because there's a part of his game that is really average for a guy his ability. And you saw it. We've seen it. It's like he's out of position. He doesn't play that steady, hard defense, team defense. And my last one is that if you went to the great players, this is number 10, if you went to the great players and you asked them what you asked me, what is basketball IQ?
Mm-hmm.
They would come up with the same 10, maybe in a different way, saying it in a different way. They may add a couple, but the great players would know. That's what I think. They're aware of it. If they play long enough, they become aware of it. So my 10th one is, I think the great players have the IQ and they're aware that they do.
Okay, the self-awareness.
Yes, but I think if you asked them, they would say things like, you know, I don't let things bother me, you know, and if things bother me, yeah, I let them go. Mm-hmm. I don't dwell on them a real long time. And I think that's huge. And also, I don't get distracted. Even though I may play to the crowd, I may get pissed off like Green, I don't let it bother me. You know, and I think it'd be interesting to ask guys like Curry, you know, and Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan what their idea of is a basketball IQ, and see what they come up with. What are their examples? You know, I bet they would be maybe not in the same wording, you know, but I think there would be some of it, because they're not coaches.
Right.
They would come up with some of these things.
Because it's like I've asked players before in the past, like, you know, about even the mechanics of shooting, and they don't have any idea. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're just sort of instinctual or not whatever. They just sort of did it. But then again, you talk guys like to Lillard or Curry, they know every single detail about what they do. Now, does that mean you couldn't be great and sort of just be like Chris Mullin, instinctual?
Right.
Like, you can, but I think that there's something, you know, that holds you back. Now, the funny thing is, like, Larry Bird might be a good example of a guy who had a tremendous IQ. I wonder, though, if he knew exactly what he did and how he moved and all those things. I don't know, because he did coach for a little while.
Well, he might now, because he's done a little coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that always impressed me about him was so even keel. Always intense, but not out of control.
Yeah.
Always very aware of what was happening. You know, it's like I remember that great steal he made in the playoffs and threw it back to Johnson. It's like, how did he know to look? Forget the pass. Forget to see. How do you know to look so quickly?
But I want to give Dennis Johnson deserves equal, if not more, credit, because how did he know to cut? That was what I never understood.
Exactly.
It looked like a design play, didn't it?
Right. And I think that about the Warriors sometimes. You know, it's like I saw them make a play where they came down and Curry cut through on his own and Green threw him the ball and he laid it up. And I thought, God, do they practice like cutting through like that? You know, I'll bet they do, but I'll bet that was very instinctive.
Right.
So it's like they have that. They have that awareness. That is IQ. And I think a neat thing to do would be to interview. See what they – what is basketball IQ? I mean, obviously – you're the best, one of the best that ever lived. What do you think it is? You know, it's like Kareem Abdul's jump hook, his hook. You know, I didn't see him do that a lot in college. All of a sudden, he's in the pros and he's doing that all the time. I mean, it's in an art form. It's like he's thinking outside the box. That's mm-hmm. like Maravich going through his legs. You know, it's an art form, and he's like, God, this is a great player that's developed this. You know, this technique. That no one else has done that. Has anybody done that? So how did he develop it? How did he have the IQ to think outside the box and see the fundamentals and see how it works, see how to move and work on it? There it is. That's it. You know? And it's like when I look at Larry Bird, I think that's exactly what I think. He always played like he just knew exactly what was happening. He knew where the ball was going. He could rebound it on either side. You know, it's just his timing was perfect.
Yeah.
You know? And he's obviously one of the greatest players that ever lived with not the greatest physical ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he couldn't jump out of the gym. He wasn't faster than fast, you know. But as good, oh my God. I mean, he had it all.
Right, and I think what we're getting at here is that the through line, because all these different players that we talk about who are terrific and great and the best, Magic, Larry, Michael, Steph, all these guys, is this notion of even keel, right? They have some ability to control their emotions, and you know, and we've heard it before, that everything slows down for them in those pressure moments.
Good point.
And then, and of course, we've seen the guys who don't. Some of them might have been even keeled as well, but then a lot of the guys who are very explosive in nature, you know, that's, I think, where the coaching reaction is. Like, Russell Westbrook plays with a rage that is difficult for me to watch. So right. I think the real question here is, you might not be able to teach any of the things on your list. It might just have to be intrinsic. However, the one thing I believe you could help somebody with is finding that center, finding that balance, and being as emotionally stable and aware as you can. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. And I think you can improve that, but I think sometimes it's just there. And as they get older and get more experienced and they're great physically, they just rise to the very top of their profession
mm-hmm.
in sports and especially in basketball. They get to the very top. And then you look at all the great players and you see that. It's just something about their awareness
mm-hmm.
that you see other players have to a degree, and they're really good players, but they never get to the very top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, maybe it comes back to the nervous system. I don't know. But so, I think, right, you can teach that.
Well, then to wrap this up then, the question then becomes, what about the coaches that are raving lunatics on the sideline? What does that do to your team? And how does that inspire your team to maintain what we're talking about, which I think we believe is so important? You know, that's an interesting question. And you know, we see it a lot of times with like Doc Rivers, for instance, where the complaining to the referees, it seems to clearly have influenced the players to complain a lot about the referees. And they get out of their game sometimes from that stuff. So then the next question is, what happens when you have a coach that doesn't have that same even keel?
I don't know. I think as a coach myself, I had that even keel, but I was always real high. I was really intense. Mm-hmm. And I think back about that, you know, what effect that has. But I don't know. I think I think there's game coaching, but I also think that coaching comes down to reacting and making the right decision at the right time. It's like you don't know when the right time is. You just do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like some guy may react a certain way, and the way you react to him at that moment might make all the difference in the world. The way you react to your team, you know, we've all heard about, I've done it. I've gone and ripped my team because they played so poorly in the first half. I mean, ripped them, screaming and yelling, and they came out. I couldn't even believe what I saw. They were all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we know that coaches have done that. But we also know that they've, you know, maybe that was the right time to do that. Maybe that's what they needed. But it's to do it at the right time when they need it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always thought, what's the coach for the Lakers?
Byron Scott?
No, the won all the championships.
Pat Riley?
No. It was at Chicago.
Phil Jackson.
Right. Phil Jackson, he would be kind of like joking, sitting in his chair. And I would think like, God. But I think the way he related to each player individually really made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did it, maybe not at the moment like I thought he should do it, but he was doing it other times that had an effect on the players. You know, he was able to see, he was able to get past his ego and see what was needed, which comes back to, you know, a player's own ego.
Mm-hmm.
Is Westhead. Why do I always forget his name? Not Westhead.
Riley?
No, the guard.
Oh, Westbrook.
Westbrook. It's his ego that gets him in his way. He's one speed, one dimension. Mm-hmm. Even though he's changed a little bit, he's trying to. trying to be more of a facilitator, it doesn't change his game that much. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
Right. You know, the other thing I that we could take away from IQ, I think, is the joy. Like, can you derive pleasure out of a teammate's success? Is part of it. Do you derive pleasure from helping your teammate achieve that success? One of the examples I'll give is Westbrook would go to the basket and perceive that he got fouled and not get a call. However, his teammate puts the ball in. And he is yelling at the ref. He is glowering. He's not, hey, thanks for putting that ball in for me or picking me up or whatever. And I feel like that, even no matter what Michael was as far as a teammate, I always felt like he could, A, was letting it go instantly. And B, he would be like, he would recognize what that his teammate did and he would acknowledge that. And you could feel that he was deriving pleasure from that. And I feel like there are players out there at all levels that aren't open to that.
Yeah, and how about the guy who makes the basket after he's fouled and sees him complaining instead of saying, nice shot? It's like, does that bring him down a little bit? Of course it does. And then I think of James, how he's changed his game over the years. He's more a facilitator. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, you could go both ways with that because he's so fantastic. But he's actually trying to see the whole picture. And I think that's one of the things that makes him stand out so much. We haven't mentioned him, you know, because he hasn't won all those multiple championships. But he's such a team player. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you could conceivably say, just take 40 shots a game and we'll just screen for you. There'll be games he'd make 30 of them.
Yeah.
You know? And is that wrong? But he's trying to get the team to play together. You see it in his game, you know, and I think that makes him one of the greatest players of all time. He's got to be considered that when he's done, mm-hmm. you know, and he has that ability. But he also has he's so good. Is he so good that transcends to changing his game a little bit? I think so. I think that's part of his IQ. It's just so obvious, you know?
Absolutely. Well,
put him on your team. This is amazing.
Oh, I know. By the way, I'm troubled by LeBron on a lot of different levels about like the coaching stuff. But you know, it's tough to maintain that because he plays the game the right way. He is always willing to make the right pass, even if it's not him shooting the game-winning shot. And that's what I've always loved about him and been impressed. Because remember, he if you look at the top scorers of all 81 and 100 points, whatever, he's not up there very often. He's never had those huge scoring games because he's always been that way, even at the height of his powers.
Right.
And I've always loved that about him. And I feel like, you know, so it's a weird dichotomy with him because I should elevate him as high as Steph Curry or anybody.
Right.
And you know, he's had enough issues with some of that stuff that I get troubled with, but certainly the way he plays when he steps in that court, he always makes the right play. So, you know, just to wrap up, run down that list you created for us for IQ so we can hear them all in one shot.
Okay. Number one was the nervous system. Two was little ego. Three was intellectualize. Four, not distracted. Five, rises to the occasion. Six, experiments, thinks outside the box. Seven, sees the whole, not just the part. Eight, strong, flexible, and good balance. 9, quick, but not out of control. And 10, if you ask the great players, they could describe the IQ characteristics.
Love it. That's perfect. Spoken like a true teacher. If you guys can't tell, that Al is also a history teacher for a long time as well. And it has that organization that always, you know, had our practices running very smoothly. So, Al, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and breaking this down for us. I know that every coach that listens to this is really going to benefit.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. It's fun doing it with you.
Like you got it. Well, don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel, we're a conversation. You in? Are you in, Al?
Yes, I'm in, all the way.